Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We have a fantastic episode in your ears. We'll be talking with Ivan Tornos a little later in the podcast. He is this week's FOMO interview. I talked with Ivan Tornos at Device Talks Boston. Then after that, I had a really fantastic interview with Quentin Blackford. Quentin's the CEO of iRhythm. iRhythm is a company I've been following forever. And it's one of those companies, I think, that's really found its footing over the last 5 years. Had some struggles 5 years ago. Quentin Blackford took over in 2021. And we'll talk about what's happened since. They've got a really great way of diagnosing and identifying arrhythmias. And what's particularly interesting is what that could mean for iRhythm and for healthcare and how they're using their technology to really reach out to the patients. So Quentin Blackford is a medtech lifer and is doing a great job over there at iRhythm. So I look forward to bringing you that story. Before we begin, I wanted to remind you that Device Talks West is happening on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Make sure you register at west.devicetalks.com. Other than that, we're taking a little break from Device Talks Tuesdays, but we'll be back in a few weeks. I'll tell you about those episodes as we get closer to that. So without any more to share, let us get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
How are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well.
Hey, Chris Neumarker. Remember we talked about the Red Sox trip to Minnesota in our last podcast?
Yeah. You know, they got rid of half the team.
I know. We talked about that. I don't know if you've noticed. The Red Sox, they've had some success lately. But what I'm trying to get at is when the Red Sox, you know how every major league player now, when they get a hit, they have to do some weird gesture to the dugout of solidarity. They have to, you know, I don't know, pretend they're a monster or some kind of... The Red Sox new gesture when they do something well is they thrust their arms out like an airplane and they kind of like, and do you know why they do that?
Why?
Because when they flew into Minnesota, they had such a terrible turbulence experience that they all were terrified they were going to die.
Did they hear like Peggy Sue come on like intercom?
I mean, I forget which player was like, oh, it was so bad. I had to put my seatbelt on. And Rob Refsnyder was like, why wasn't your seatbelt on anyway?
Right.
You're in an airplane that's landing. Yes, but it was such, I know you've had experience flying to and from, not only around Minnesota, but you've had your issues in Boston as well. But I thought you would enjoy the fact that the Red Sox, like many people flying into a Midwest airport, had a little extra fun on the way
down.
My
favorite MSP moment was like when my wife and I were going on our honeymoon, we flew out and we were by the wing and we were just chatting. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of geese around the plane. And then you just saw a goose get sucked in the engine.
We did not condone.
It had the same sound as like a shoe and a dryer.
We're not laughing at dead geese. Just the circumstances of the show. So did they?
We were
they
fine. Look? There was another engine. It turned around.
Oh, like, okay. You did have to. You
the
did
pilots have to. Were like patting each other on the back when they came out of the plane. That's
just like Robert Hayes in Airplane, just like sweat dripping down from their forehead.
I think there were some pilots that got a beer.
Like, after that. Like, oh, no, that's why not, the Red Sox, if you're watching
the Red Sox,
a highlight, and you see the Red Sox do an airplane thing, that's homage to Minnesota, landing in Minnesota.
So. I would say coming, as you've said, like if any air, you got stuck at MSP, like and it's a nice airport.
It's a delightful airport, yes.
Delightful airport. Yeah, get a nice view of the lakes when you're taking off and coming in a lot of times.
It's my favorite airport to spend 8 hours in, for sure.
Yes. Totally. You had a nice leather couch to nap on.
I was prepared to spend the night. And if I didn't have that, they had like 8-foot high stacks of mats for people to lie on. They were very, very thoughtful. Nice. Yeah.
Very thoughtful. That's great. That's why they say Minnesota nice. It's all
Minnesota nice, because when you're stuck at our airport, we take care of you. Anyway, all right. That's enough of
Logan. They just like give you a bottle of water and a granola bar and say good luck.
Logan's like, all right, there's a chair. Go over the chair.
There's a chair.
Yeah. I got to get out of here.
Joy your chair.
All right.
All right.
Let's roll into the Newsmakers, Chris Newmarker.
Newsmakers.
Award-winning, highly sought after. I mean, the money thrown our way to get on this list is just extraordinary. People knew the offers we were given. It's just,
Olive Garden gift cards. We
are driven purely by editorial importance and significance. So number five on the Newmarker's Newsmakers.
Number five, this got a lot of attention on Mass Device, and this was, honestly, anything about Medtronic gets a lot of attention on Mass Device, which makes sense. You know,
have a lot of employees. Yeah.
A lot of employees there, yeah. their chief communication officer, Torrid Neptune, is announcing its departure, after a number of years at the company, and they're promoting up from within with Amy Jo Meyer taking over the position. So congrats to Amy on that, and it looks like Torrid's heading off to, be a full-time tenure track assistant professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So there we go. So he's got to teach the next generation. But, there's been a lot. I mean, we have seen a lot of exits of like high-level executives at Medtronic in recent years.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, we had Sean Salmon a couple of months ago, and I think Jim Hammerin had an article this week about Medtronic salaries.
I'd recommend look at that analysis. That's a really good analysis that Jim Hammerin has on medical design outsourcing. And
talked about some of the pay raises as well. So
Bob White's departure, and who's now running Olympus, and some exciting moves going on over at Olympics now that Bob White's running it.
He's apparently relocated to Tokyo.
Wow.
He's in Tokyo. I reached out to him. I would love to have him speak at Device Talks West. I'm sorry, Device Talks Minnesota or Boston next year, or West. And I was informed that they will try, but he's now based in Tokyo. So, it will depend upon his travel. So
maybe, here's the hope. And Bob, it's interesting, all these changes going on at Medtronic. I had a little thing teasing something on LinkedIn yesterday. We're talking on a Friday morning, but it's interesting. All these changes going on at Medtronic, they're spinning off the diabetes business. Mm-hmm. They're going to be at the top of our, MDO MedTech Big 100 report that comes out this year, but with the way things are going, they spin off that diabetes business. J&J is like growing a lot in cardiology.
This year? Shockwave.
It's shaping up. They're gonna be at the top of the list next year. Medtronic will not be the largest medical device company in the world probably next year.
Well, Tim Schmidt of J&J will be at Device Talks West, so I think you should. You should bring that up and egg him on. Like, come on, Tim, number one could be yours. Like, make sure you push
it.
Company, bring in some more revenue. You could be number one on MDOs.
They could be number one.
Top 100.
Is it bragging rights? I don't know. And Medtronic has a lot of good arguments for how this like helps them focus more getting that diabetes business spun out. The analysts like what's going on.
Well, I mean, if anyone's running a company to simply be the biggest, I think they're kind of missing the point. I think they have to be the best. So
they might not be the biggest, but they'll, especially Minnesota, I think a lot of people will still be like rooting for them as the best.
Here we go.
I tell you that Boston Scientific is? No, we won't.
Yes, Chris just taunted me on LinkedIn, and I fell right into his trap. So, yes. Well done.
All right. Well, we'll move on now.
Move on to number four.
Move on. Nothing stops. Number four on the list, we've got Alcon is going to acquire Star Surgical in a $1.5 billion deal. That's going to like expand even more what they're offering in the vision care tech space. Like Star is going to bring on like the Evo implantable Collamer lenses into Alcon's portfolio, I loved it on LinkedIn. You were talking about how fortuitous it was that
I spoke
to the head of J&J Vision recently, and we had him on the podcast last week. But it's an interesting space. We run stuff about you know, all the, you know, innovations going on in lenses and whatnot, and it gets attention on Mass Device. And, you know, I mean, this just seems like another deal that should hopefully, like, boost the competition even more in the space and, you know, make for some interesting times to follow.
Yeah, what's interesting about Vision and the deal, obviously J&J will remain in the lead, but will make Alcon more competitive for sure. But what's interesting about Vision is how consumer oriented it is, even more than diabetes. Like it's almost so consumer oriented that it's like it's a tertiary, it's an adjacent neighborhood to medtech in a way. It's certainly part of medtech, but certainly a lot of the lessons learned there, I think, could be carried over into the regular traditional medtech, because I think medtech's understanding the power of the patient more and more. And I think patients are understanding their own power more and more. So we'll see where.
So if I go in a heart clinic, there should just be boxes of pacemakers sitting under glass cases that I can like pick one out. Like when they're like, you know, you need one of these. Like, yeah, you know, I think I like the Boston Scientific or better than Medtronic or the Medtronic better.
I may be distorting my point, but I think going into the physician's office and saying, hey, should I be treated for arrhythmia? And we'll talk about this today with Quentin Blackford of iRhythm and what they did to really try to change the paradigm from the Holter monitor and really break through those traditional barriers that make it difficult to bring a disruptive technology to healthcare.
So, kind of the challenge with healthcare of like, well, this is the way we've always done it and it works. And being like, no, this could be a lot better if we, you know, had some, and viewing it in a more of a consumer viewpoint that, you know, this could be more low profile. This could be, you know, there could be a lot more adoption of this. You know, we could really like catch more problems.
I'll amend my point a bit. I mean, I guess now that I think about it, maybe it's the physicians in Vision that really dictate those choices. Because if I go get contact lenses, I guess you're right. To your point, I'm not asking, like, I want AccuView. I just want contact lenses. And it's really up to the physician to decide. Yeah. I mean, you can choose types or functions, and that may stir your interest. But regardless, I think Vision's one of the more forward-facing industries.
They do. I mean, you see ads on TV for the contact lenses. Mm-hmm. So they're obviously like kind of the same thing you see in pharmaceuticals. You might get a prescription for something, but there's ads on TV getting people excited about it. And, you know, and we are seeing that more in even more traditional med tech. Like, I mean, Zimmer Biomet's like, you know, they've got Arnold saying, like, you'll be back, you know, and stuff. Yep. So
good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff. All right. We've got to keep moving here. Number three on the list, Inspire Medical stock had a rough week. We're talking on Friday morning. I mean, they've lost more than a third of the value of their stock this week after a tough report. You know, like where they were, you know, discussing like headwinds that they're facing, and they reduced their guidance because they said there's a slowdown in the rollout of their next gen Inspire 5. You know, one other thing they mentioned that's interesting is that they're, you know, they're engaged right now in a patent infringement suit with a company in Belgium, Nyxoah. But they've got competing technology, and you know, and they are looking to branch into the United States more. So, there might be some of that going on as well. But the analysts, you know, we're saying they, you know, we're still, you know, saying they. You know, that they, you know, were optimistic about Inspire and in the long run. Like, you know, Baird was talking about, like, you know, like they could, that it was achievable for when they get to more normalized growth next year. But, you know, definitely some hurdles for Inspire, which has been this, you know, really interesting, fast growing company around here in the Twin Cities. I mean, even, you know, I remember they used to be in a mini mall, I think, like above a storefront, and now they've got like their logo on a nice like taller office building and you know, like not too far from my house, actually. So hopefully we'll see things advance more for them.
And I think what's interesting about Nyxoah, and I'm trying to find this, I know they have a partnership with ResMed. So they work with ResMed to a degree. So
interesting.
Yeah, interesting competitor for Inspire.
Especially they have ResMed with them potentially. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought there was an investment involved. I'm Googling it right now. I don't see an investment, but I do see something in September 28, 2023. Nyxoah announces partnership with ResMed in Germany.
Interesting.
So they do work together. So obviously Inspire is a great company. We had them at Device Talks Minnesota. Yeah. Kind of surprised to see the big hit on the stocks. These things tend to bounce back, and I know you folks will keep an eye on it. Just for credit purposes, Jim Hammerand wrote the article about Tar Neptune leaving Medtronic. Sean Hooley wrote the Alcon Star Surgical and the Inspire Medical story.
So we're heading up to number two. We've got, you know, this was also from Sean Hooley, and this was the FTC is, you know, Edwards Lifesciences says the FTC is moving to block its planned, you know, $1.2 billion acquisition of Genevalve, which was generating a lot of, you know, excitement in the industry. But they both the companies say they're going to, you know, take this to court if they have to get this completed. But yeah, that is interesting. We saw a lot of FTC actions in the Biden years, but looks like the FTC is still going after stuff in the new Trump administration too.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure how to what to think of it, in that because everything's become so political. I remember I did some Googling and I was trying to figure out, like, is this common? And the numbers, you're right. This is fairly consistent behavior. Ray Cohen, the former CEO of Exonix, had posted on LinkedIn a day or so ago saying that the FTC decision, and he's critical of the current administration, so... But this had nothing political to say about it. He said the FTC decision on the Genevalve sale to Edwards was not surprising. That aortic regurgitation is considered to be a greenfield opportunity, and Genevalve's expecting its product to be FDA approved. So basically, he wasn't surprised that this happened. So it wasn't a shock, and I guess it would give Edwards a considerable hold on the market. So we'll see how it develops. Edwards is moving forward to pursue regulatory approval of the deal. So we'll see what happens. But it wasn't, my larger point is that this didn't blindside people who know more than I do. So
this wasn't a total shock.
No. And it didn't, it's not one of those things that just leaves you scratching your head. So
that's good to know, but still definitely like a big development for sure. And then number one on the list.
Another Sean Hooley special.
This is another company based right around where I live. In fact, I looked up their headquarters and it's not too far from the grocery store I usually shop at. So maybe I'll run into.
Thanks for that color, Chris. We were all wondering where you shop.
I was like, wow, they're over near Vicksburg Road. You're like, Chris won't answer my emails. You just like just show up. They're like, there's a Hy-Vee, there's a Lunds and Byerly's. There's like,
they're just shopping there, hoping to run into Mike Blue, the CEO and president of Histo-Science.
Is Mike Blue a Lunds and Byerly's person or Fresh Thyme? Or like, we'll find out. Anyway, oh my gosh, people are listening to us like, what is up with these guys? So,
Histo-Sonics, move on.
Histo-Sonics, there was some buzz that there were a bunch of companies looking to acquire them. I mean, they were, you know, like one of those type of anonymously sourced stories we see in the big business publications. You know, but they are getting acquired now for $2.25 billion. I mean, this is like they've got like a robotic system that uses focused ultrasound energy via robotic arm, you know, to like non-invasively destroy tumors. So it's really interesting technology and really interesting acquisition because they're not getting acquired by anyone in particular. They're getting, acquired by this whole, syndication of private and public investors that are going to be, putting, $2.25 billion into their business, including like a decent amount of private equity. So it's like, this is like private equity striking again in the device industry.
Yeah, for sure. Private equity striking again and giving an opportunity for, by acquiring and I'm assuming recapitalizing the company, giving the existing or the previous venture investors an opportunity to cash out at that that very high price, or to kind of roll their equity over into the new entity and take advantage of the future growth. And it looks like from the list of participating investors in the syndicate, that a lot of them stayed on board and want to see this grow and see where this this business will go. So totally exciting. And I think it's a great, as I posted on LinkedIn, I think it's a great, I don't expect this to be a larger trend. We're not going to see this happen a lot, but any opportunity for investors to cash out before the traditional long runway of medtech investing, I think will only help more investors decide to invest in medical device companies. So,
do you think that people that running companies that are getting up to that situation, like, okay, we're moving forward with this technology, we sure would like to get acquired, or whatnot. Do you think this is a deal they're going to be scrutinizing? Like, hey, is this an option for us? Like something versus just like, instead of just getting a strategic to buy us?
I mean, I think this type of thing is already part of any sort of option that you're given if you're a mid-tier company that's looking for exiting opportunities. So I think anytime we look at, like, a CMR was talked about being acquired before, I'm sure this type of thing is always being talked about. So I think private equity can certainly step in and provide the gunpowder or the firepower necessary to carry these companies for the long haul. But I don't know how many I don't know how many private equity investors there are who have the money to do this. Yeah. I don't know how many medtech companies they are with the growth profile to really justify a deal like this. So Histosonics is certainly one of the more interesting, we say surgical robotics. I mean, there's no surgery involved. I mean, it's more of an external treatment. So it's not
a robotic system.
The robotic system.
It's delivering a cancer therapy, but it's one that isn't invasive.
It's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, again, going back to the patients, if you're sitting down with your physician and he says, well, I can do this, so I can cut you open and cut out the tumor, or you can lie on a table as we aim ultrasound energy at your belly and you don't have surgical recovery.
Right.
If I'm the patient, I'm like, let's try the second one because that sounds a lot more appealing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the payers are like, yeah, we would rather pay for that as opposed to pay for surgery and recovery and things like that. So
totally. I mean, yeah, there's less risk of infection. You don't have to worry about hospital time or whatnot of getting an operation.
And I have to think the private equity groups kicked every tire possible talking to payers and talking to providers. I see this as a huge endorsement for the Histosonics technology. You sometimes don't know when you hear of these technologies, like, really? That's going to work? I think if someone's putting a couple of $1 billion behind something, they've done their homework. So good news all around for Minnesota.
That's definitely, we're really busy with the big 100 right now. It's definitely on my to-do list to reach out and visit soon. So I'll be reaching out soon because it is definitely just a really exciting technology and could go check it out and find out some more about it. And, then I can, pick up the rotisserie chicken for the night or whatever. So great. Well,
What's your grocery chain?
I mean, I don't want people finding me.
Yes, you'll be mobbed as your grocery shop.
I don't know. I mean, I've got all these medtech nerds like fighting me.
Wouldn't you love to do steps?
I threw out options. It could be Lens and Byerly's. We could always do a poll.
Can you say Fresh Thyme?
Fresh Thyme, yes.
Okay, because my there's a Fresh Thyme in West Lafayette, Indiana, where my son does his grocery shopping. Please, folks, don't harass my college son, looking for medtech nerd selfies.
Can you get,
God, Dad, I can't even go by
it's
my...
It's tough being the son of a medtech person.
Oh, these poor kids, what they have to deal with. All right, man, great list.
Fun as always, man. All right, catch you.
All right, Chris Newmarker, great job as always. Always wonderful way to get up to date on what's gone on in medtech. Now we get to talk to one of the primary newsmakers in our industry. I spoke with Ivan Tonos, the CEO and president of Zimmer Biomet. He, of course, was our opening keynote at Device Talks Boston. He was kind enough to stay a little bit later and sit down with me, or actually I think we're standing at the Device Talks Boston studio that was on the exhibition floor at the conference. So let's hear from Ivan Tonos of Zimmer Biomet. Yvonne, thanks for joining us. You have such a passion for MedTech, so I think it's great to talk about MedTech's future with you. What drives you about MedTech? What anyone who talks to you walks away saying, wow, where does that energy come from?
Tom, thanks for having me here. It's purpose. You and I spoke about this in the past. It's purpose. My purpose is to alleviate the pain of others, to help others, to inspire others. And I get to do that for a living. I've only been in MedTech. My entire life has been a healthcare career. And the inspiration, the purpose started with my own story. My father died of cancer when I was 5 years old. My uncle became my father figure. He died shortly after when he was 45 years old. And then later in life, I lost my brother. He didn't even make it to 45. He was 44 when he passed away. So my personal story shaped my professional journey. Mm-hmm. I do believe we can do things to help others. And we meant to get to do this for a living every single day. So in one word, which I cannot pronounce, is purpose.
So what are some of the challenges that are facing MedTech today? There's probably two or three that you're focused on constantly. What problems are you looking to solve?
Sure. So they obviously the short-term headwinds, you know, mm-hmm. tariffs, and that will be a two-hour conversation, which we're not going to have today. But when you think about MedTech holistically, I think there is five key areas that we, as leaders, need to focus on. And I'm going to give you five words, and then I'm going to unpack them in less than 3 minutes, I promise you. Smaller, faster, better, cheaper, and broader. So smaller. We need to have a smaller portion of patients living in pain. And that can be cardiovascular issues, can be orthopedic pain, can be any specialty. So I'll use the data point for us in orthopedics. 600 million people on earth are living in pain associated with arthritis.
Wow.
With the lion's share of that problem being osteoarthritis. We can shrink that number. Today, only 5% of those patients are doing something about it. So again, smaller pie. Then it's faster. I generally believe that we can reduce the time of care. The entire episode of treatment. You don't need to live in pain 2-3 years. You need to go through complex pre-surgical stuff, long surgeries, lengthy lengths of stay in a hospital, long rehab. Can we make it faster? Better. Outcomes can be better. One of every five patients that goes through a knee arthroplasty is dissatisfied with her or his procedure. So that number needs to be something else other than 80%. It has to be 100%. Mm. So it has to be better. And again, through data, through better techniques, through redefining surgical algorithms, we can deliver better outcomes. And yes, it has to be cheaper. And we got to work on taking cost out of the system. And it's not reducing the cost of the implant. It's thinking broadly around the episode of treatment. And then broader, you know, equity. In a non-political way, we have to have a conversation around how do we make sure that best-in-class MedTech applies to everybody, not just those who are born in the right zip code. So again, smaller pie, faster episode of treatment, better outcomes, absolutely needs to be cheaper, and yes, it needs to be for everybody. So those are the five key areas.
That's it, huh? That's just it. Those areas?
And we're going to get it. Easy, we're going to get it done.
What's the solution? What are the multiple solutions? I'm assuming new technology is going to be a huge part of it. You mentioned data. I know you're working in other areas as well.
Sure. I think we need to have a conversation that encompasses the entire ecosystem, as you and I spoke about, right? So not just talk to the physician. Think, what is the patient need? Patient, the physician, of course. And then having conversations with providers and payers, which I don't think we've done that in a meaningful way as an industry. I don't think we actively discuss the economic outcome associated with these clinical outcomes. So I think there is a broader conversation with the customer. In terms of solutions, yes, you know, all of the above. AI, robotics, predictive analytics, rethinking new generation devices. So I think the combination of the conversation with a different set of customers, thinking beyond the implant, working as an industry, not just Zimmer Biomet, we as an industry, is going to help us solve those five key areas.
So looking forward, you've identified the problem, the solutions. 10 years from now, what do you think the outcome will be? What does Zimmer Biomet look like? What does orthopedics look like?
I'm gonna divide the answer on Zimmer Biomet in two parts. First 5 years, and then the second half, the next 5 years. In the next 5 years, we at Zimmer Biomet are going to work on solving four meaningful problems, which are associated with those five key areas that I was talking about. One is awareness. I already mentioned the amount of patients living in pain. We're going to run bold campaigns to bring patients into seeing primary care doctors, ultimately potentially orthopedic surgeons. Enters Arnold Schwarzenegger. Our chief movement officer is the Terminator. You cannot have a better person to terminate pain than the Terminator himself. So that's number one. Number two is infection, safety. People can die in an operating room because of infection. We're going to crack the code on infection. Infection needs to be 0%. And through better techniques, faster surgeries, coded devices, we're going to crack the code on that. Number three is efficiency. We believe we can deliver faster surgeries without compromising outcomes. Smart robotics, predictive analytics, smart operating rooms, better designs, better all of the above. And then outcomes. We believe that we can be the company that cracks the code on delivering 100% satisfaction rates. And again, we're going to look at the entire ecosystem of devices, algorithms of care, robotics, AI, and we're going to think beyond the operating room. Before surgery, during surgery, and after surgery. Mm-hmm. So the next 5 years about awareness, infection, efficiency, faster, and then outcomes, better. As we enter the next 5 years, I do want to put Zimmer Biomet, today's Zimmer Biomet, out of business. I envision a day in where people will laugh about, you remember the days we used to have knee implants, hip implants, metal and plastic in our bodies. We can restore anatomy versus replacing anatomy. And we're doing both things in that regard. In the next 5 years, I also envision a day where we can really personalize medicine. Through all this data we collect before surgery, during surgery, and after surgery, we can personalize future surgeries. We are the company that collects the most data in orthopedic care today. Hmm. And we got to do something with that data. And then in those next 5 years, as we enter year 10, we're going to be more than a musculoskeletal care company, an orthopedic company. All these great lessons we're learning in orthopedics, we're going to transfer those to other areas. So we have a small business in cardiac surgery. We're doing craniomaxillofacial stuff. We're entering newer spaces. And 10 years from now, Zimmer Biomet will be more than just the leading orthopedic company. So that's what's happening 10 years from now.
I have to think all of that is adding to your enthusiasm and really helping you fulfill your purpose.
And along the way, we're going to take care of many, many more patients. Today, we impact someone's life every 7 seconds. One day, we're going to impact in lives at a faster rate. And yes, that keeps me energized and excited.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing your vision and for joining us today.
You do an amazing job. Thanks for what you do.
Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Once again, it was great to hear from Ivan Tornos. Now let's play our keynote interview. Again, I spoke with Quentin Blackford. He's the CEO of iRhythm. Well, Quentin Blackford, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
It's great to connect with iRhythm. It's one of those stories we've been following for years. And I feel like the last couple of years have really the story's taking a new and exciting direction. So I want to unpack that in a moment. And I want to learn about your background in a moment, but I got to reveal, like, one of my challenges is spelling the word rhythm. Do you have like a mnemonic device, like R before Y or anything like that, that can help me out?
You know how I remember it? H before Y. That's how
all
I
right,
was
cool.
thinking of it, right?
All right. Thank you. I figured you had something, so I'll work on that next time.
It's as simple as that.
I always do RY. I'm like, no, wait. Okay, good. All right. Yeah. So that's solved. H before Y. Quentin, how'd you find your way into the medtech industry?
Yeah, you know, it goes way back early in my career. I was born in the Midwest. I actually was born and raised on a farm in a farming community. But it happened to be very close to sort of the orthopedic capital of the world in Winona Lake, Indiana. And I had learned early on in my career, I didn't want to pursue farming as a career. I wanted to pursue the college pathway. I had the opportunity to play some college sports here locally at a school by the name of Grace College. And it introduced me into an opportunity with an internship with Zimmer Holdings at the time, which was a large orthopedic company here in town. And, you know, I very quickly connected with this aspect of having the opportunity to impact patient lives. Improve the outcomes for our patients that we were treating. And that always connected with me and sort of grabbed hold of a purpose for me personally that just always resonated and continued on with me. So that's sort of what led me into the orthopedic world or into healthcare in general. And then my career sort of navigated on beyond that. But that's sort of what introduced me into it.
Was MedTech something that you were actively aware of growing up? I think you referenced your word. I'm asking because I know in Minnesota, it's a big part of the cultural fabric there. I'm outside of Boston. Not so much here. We're more pharma biotech. In Winona Lake around Warsaw, does everyone know someone who works somewhere medtech related?
Certainly healthcare related.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I go as far as med tech. When I think about med tech, really combining the aspect of medical innovation with technology, that probably came a little bit later in my career. And I can talk about how we stepped into that. But certainly everybody was aware of the healthcare industry and orthopedics in particular. At the time we had Zimmer, it was here in town. Medtronic was here in town. DePuy, who was owned by Johnson & Johnson, was here in town. Biomet as well was right here in town. And there's been a lot of consolidation in the space now, but we certainly all were aware of the healthcare industry. You couldn't walk through town without seeing somebody wearing a badge of one of those companies. So it was very clear. Healthcare was here. It was here in a big way. And the community certainly benefited from that as well.
Now, you're looking at your career. You got an interesting track. You went from Zimmer to NuVasive, where you're head of strategy and corporate integrity, and then over to Dexcom. So you've kind of been migrating, it seems, more from ortho into tech.
You're right.
Well, let's talk about the move to NuVasive, but was there a point in time where you said you really see the opportunity in tech, or is tech just part of med tech and it's where you sort of landed?
No, there was a real sort of conscious choice on my part to start to move towards med tech, I would say midway through my career. I started in Zimmer, as we mentioned. I had the opportunity to move to a very fast-paced, high-growth spine company in NuVasive. I was a finance background, so I came up through the finance pathway, but I always really enjoyed the operational aspects of the business. So I was always looking to take on more operational responsibilities. Ultimately, I was the CFO at NuVasive. We grew that company from about $100, $150 million to just over $1 billion. When I started to get the call at Dexcom, which was a diabetes company, very different than orthopedics, but the markets were massive. And what I really was intrigued by there was the convergence of sort of healthcare into consumer technology. So that company was trying to take and replace the traditional finger stick with a sensor on the body that would talk to a smart device and give you real-time, you know, information at your fingertips to understand your health. And that really intrigued me. And as I got into that company, as the CFO, started to take on more responsibilities with the chief operating officer role, it just really appealed to me, sort of the blending of consumerism and medical technology that led to a career that's now, for the last, you know, call it 10, 15 years, been in med tech, and probably something that will always be a part of my career from this point forward. I love blurring those two lines.
Is a move from finance into operations, is that less typical than from sales or marketing, or is that a pretty common path?
I would say 10 years ago, it was probably less typical.
Okay.
I think in today's world, it's becoming more and more common. There's always sort of a discipline around the finance side of things. And as we're in a marketplace now where the cost of capital is a bit higher than what it was 5 to 10 years ago, there's a finance discipline that's always appreciated. So I think it's becoming more and more common. It's certainly not the most common pathway. I'd say commercial or R&D leaders into that CEO seat is probably still the most common pathway. But I do think you're seeing more and more finance discipline sort of step into the CEO seat.
Let's talk about your move over to iRhythm. You joined in October 2021, obviously a difficult time for MedTech and for the world. How did the opportunity come about? And was iRhythm a company that you were tracking closely, that you were aware of, something you were hoping to get involved with at some time?
Yeah, so it was a really interesting sort of how the opportunity came about. We were in the midst of an incredible run at Dexcom. It's a wonderful company, continues to do incredibly well, massive markets that are being served. I was the chief operating officer there, sort of number two in command, and really wasn't looking for a new opportunity outside of that company at that point in time. I happened to get a phone call from the folks at iRhythm, who was in the midst of looking for a new CEO. And that sort of intrigued me. I had always wanted to lead a company. Diabetes was a massive market, but if there was another market out there that could rival in size, it was cardiovascular. And so I knew that. I spoke earlier about the fact that one of the things that appealed to me about Dexcom was sort of disrupting the status quo, to change a finger stick to automated glucose sensing with a smart device. I felt like we had the same opportunity to do that at iRhythm in the cardiovascular space, to take a decades-old technology like the Holter monitor that had been out there for 50, 60 years and replace it with a patch-based technology that the company had already developed but was in the early infant stages and produce a much better outcome for patients. Mm-hmm. I just really believed in the outcomes. And I knew the story of iRhythm quite well. I was leading our advanced markets efforts at Dexcom. So we were looking at other disease states and where we thought we could potentially play as we grew that company. Cardiovascular is one of those areas, and iRhythm was one of those companies that I happened to know quite well. So when the call came in, it caught my attention very quickly. From a location perspective, it was on the West Coast. It made a lot of sense with respect to where my family and we were at that point in time, where the kids were at and their educational process. And so the stars sort of aligned in a way that just made sense. And so I took the leap and took on the opportunity. It's been a fun run ever since. We haven't looked back since day one, and we've had a lot of incredible success disrupting sort of the status quo in the cardiovascular space now with a new and much better way of monitoring for cardiac arrhythmias.
Well, let's unpack iRhythm a bit now and help folks. As I said, it's a company that people have heard about for a time, and I think we all saw it as providing the next, the alternative to the Holter monitors. But step back, if you would, and just give us a sense of what iRhythm is and a little bit about your portfolio.
Yeah, so iRhythm is a really interesting company. We're a digital healthcare company that sort of leverages the power of artificial intelligence to identify and discover arrhythmias of the heart. I think before we even get into that platform a bit, it's important to understand that heartbeats tell us some really interesting stories. And they have the power to tell us stories that change the lives of our patients if we identify sort of what's really going on there. You know, irregular heartbeats are incredibly dangerous, right? They can damage the heart, they can damage the brain, other organs, they can lead to stroke, they can even lead to potential death. That the challenge is trying to find them is like trying to find a needle in a haystack. I always like to use the analogy, my wife and I like to get out in the afternoons and walk through the local forest here. And as you're walking through, you'll always see trees that have fallen across the forest floor, right? But you never see them, you never hear them, but they're there. And the reality is cardiac arrhythmias are sort of the same way. They're happening all the time, but we're just not there to see them and identify them. And that's what we're trying to do at iRhythm is be there when those things are happening, record those events taking place, and identify them for the patient. Now, the way that we do it is we use a very different form factor than what was introduced 50, 60 years ago as the Holter monitor, which is a clunky device. You might wear it up to 48 hours, but there's a lot of noise in that device. You're not getting a good, clear signal from the heart at all, and you really can't diagnose anything. There's a recent study that was out that just showed us that north of 64% of all cardiac arrhythmias are identified after 48 hours of monitoring. Wow. A Holter generally goes, you know, through 48 hours. So under that old technology, we're missing a vast majority of arrhythmias. So what we did was we invented a patch that you wear across your chest. You wear it for 14 days at a time. So a single patch, you're not replacing it. It's just continuous wear. And we'll record anywhere from 1.5 to 2 million heartbeats over that period of time. And then we'll use the power of artificial intelligence to look through every one of those heartbeats and identify arrhythmias. And once we identify those arrhythmias, then we can diagnose from that and we can inform the physician and the patient of what is going on. And I think what's really set us apart is that we've now served more than 10 million patients. Uh-huh. 99% of the time, physicians agree with what we find in our reports and use that as the diagnosis. So when you look at sort of iRhythm relative to other companies who are now coming into the space with patch-based technologies is, you know, we've got a very high agree rate with our physicians, 99% of the time. We've got more than 40 independent peer-reviewed publications that now stand behind our technology. And we've got more than 200, you know, publications that are out there standing behind the technology altogether. There's nothing else like that in the marketplace. So it's what makes us unique. It's what led to our success. You know, we'll do somewhere, you know, between $720 to $730 million of revenue this year. So we're no longer a startup. Mm-hmm. We've just come into a path of profitability. So we're now self-sustainable. And innovation is sort of the heartbeat of who we are. And we really lean into innovation. And we'll continue to do that into the future. But that's a bit about the company. It's fascinating. And to your point, sort of in the last 24 months, I'd say we've really seen an acceleration in the awareness and the utilization of the technology.
I want to delve into what it takes to unseat and establish tech in a moment, but the move over the profitability line. What does that mean for a company? What does that feel like?
Well, it now means you can control your own destiny a bit, Tom.
Yeah,
you're not at the whim of some of those stakeholders who might have their hooks into you, whether it's debt financing or other forms of equity financing, but you now have the ability to control your own destiny, right? And that was always a very important thing for us. And it's one of the reasons that I think I was probably attracted to the iRhythm story. It's why the board probably looked to me as well to come into the iRhythm story. We were not profitable when I got here. I had a track record of moving companies from unprofitable states into profitable ones. Uh-huh. And we've done the very same thing here at iRhythm now. So last year we came into profitability. This year we'll be even more meaningfully profitable. And we're now, you know, at the point where we're generating cash, and then from this point forward, generating more and more cash that we don't have to lean on outside creditors to necessarily finance our future. And that's important to us, to be able to control our own destiny, where we're going. That's a big difference.
That's really
for
cool
companies.
So talk, if I look at the gold standard prior, the Holter monitor, and what you're offering, and I look at the description of what you do, the numbers of what you do, and what you're able to do, I'm often surprised. It's like one of those, if I was given those choices in front of me, I would very honestly steer toward your solution. It just seems to be much more comprehensive. Yeah. But in healthcare, things take time to unseat a tech. What are those challenges that you've had to overcome? You've been at this for 4 critical years at the company. What are the things, you know, we don't need to necessarily speak specifically to the Holter monitor, but what are the infrastructural challenges of medtech and of healthcare that make getting a disruptive technology into the hands of physicians and onto patients so difficult?
It's a great question. And I think every sort of sector within healthcare that is disrupting the status quo is probably navigating through the same challenges. But it starts with awareness. Mm-hmm. A lot of the physicians who are utilizing your technology and your capabilities were trained up on something very different through their educational setting. So in our case, many folks were trained up on the traditional Holter monitor, and that's what they know, and that's what they've been trained on. Many of them have made investments in their own local practice to utilize Holter monitors. So you've got to overcome sort of an awareness and an educational aspect. Sometimes you got to overcome a financial aspect when these folks make those investments. There's an access challenge. Your technology needs to get paid for. In our U.S. healthcare landscape, much of that is sort of predicated through your pathway with CMS. And so you need to get together with CMS, you need to get codes established, you need to get rates established that can get you reimbursed. That was part of the biggest challenge for iRhythm back in the day, was sort of getting a rate established that we could get reimbursed at that would allow us to go across the nation, really pushing our product. So I think access is important. I think awareness. And then I think education. I think creating awareness for the patient themselves to realize that there is a better way to find arrhythmias in our case, right? So many times it's hard to reach the patient. I think in our day and age, we're becoming much better at finding ways to get in front of the patient with exactly what our technology can do and why we're unique and why we're better. And it ends up in a situation where the patient comes into the physician office asking for a particular technology. But I'll tell you, one of the things I think that we're still wrestling with is, in our situation, it's really the physician who's choosing what device to put on the patient today. Uh-huh. Right. So we sort of still sit behind the curtain of the physician, who we're convincing, you know, that physician that we're the best technology. We have the data that demonstrates we're the best product and the best tool and tool bag to monitor for arrhythmias. But we're not as clearly aware to the patient just yet. And so I think as we can raise that awareness, you're going to see adoption continue to take off. I think importantly, too, is you have to be more than just a diagnostic tool in our space. Mm-hmm. There's probably 6 million what we call ambulatory cardiac monitoring tests taking place in the U.S. today. The reality is there's probably 27 million patients who have cardiac arrhythmias, but they're confusing their symptoms with other comorbid disease states. So like if you look at the prevalence of arrhythmias with a diabetic population or a COPD population or CKD population or obstructive sleep apnea, the prevalence of arrhythmias is incredibly high. The challenge is these patients are confusing their arrhythmias with symptoms of their other disease state. And we have to go find those patients proactively. And I think that's one thing that makes iRhythm really unique, is that while we were founded as a tool to diagnose arrhythmias, we've started to really lean into more of the predictive aspect of who likely has arrhythmias before you ever test them, so that we can find them before a catastrophic event ever takes place. And this is one of the reasons why we just announced a partnership with Lusum AI, mm-hmm. which is leveraging the power of artificial intelligence to look through sort of electronic medical records of patients and say, based upon your medical history, we can tell with a pretty high degree of accuracy that you most likely have an arrhythmia and you should wear a patch to identify and diagnose for certain whether you do or you do not. And I think that's how healthcare is changing. AI is becoming much more prevalent in that sense of finding patients earlier in the care journey. And that's where iRhythm's trying to go, is more predictive versus just simply diagnostic.
It's really fascinating. That's fascinating. The patient aspect was sort of a place I was hoping to go, and you covered it great. But yeah, I would, you're right, because patients go in and they listen to the doctors and they go and they follow the doctor's recommendation, as they should. But unless they're Googling out of their minds or such, and then we've moved beyond that now with other technologies, they don't go in there with the information they need to sort of really make a case for something else. So going forward, do you see sort of this, that the patient demographic being something that medtechs have to lean more into, like really getting their story out in front, at least giving the patients the options and letting them know that you should really be asking about this and here's why? Is that going to be a bigger part of maybe not all medtechs, but a lot of medtech companies going forward?
I think it will be, and I think it has to be.
Yeah.
I think what you're finding in this whole world of advancing wearable technology, that the patient is becoming more interested in understanding their own health. And the more information they have at their fingertips, that the more that you can identify sort of predictively that you as a patient, in our case, may have an arrhythmia or may have some other disease state, you can start to help them sort of get ahead of any catastrophic event that might take place. And of course, that's of interest to them, but it starts to become very interesting to the payer community as well, because now you're reducing the downstream cost of these catastrophic events. Like you look in the healthcare system, one of the most costly episodes of care is the visit to the ER. The reality is we can probably stop a lot of those visits to the ER. In our case, as an example, we can look through medical history and we can see with a pretty high degree of accuracy whether you do in fact have an arrhythmia or not, regardless of whether you've ever been diagnosed.
With no monitor or anything, just the data points you're looking at.
Just the data point. And really? So I'll give you two examples. We recently ran a pilot where in the first 1,000 patients, we looked across the medical history records that we had with this particular partner of ours, and these were clients of that partner. So we looked through the data set. And we said, these 1,000 patients we believe likely have an arrhythmia. Now let's go put a patch on them and let's figure out if they do or not. 920 of the first 1,000 patients actually did have an arrhythmia, but had never been diagnosed with an arrhythmia.
Wow.
That's incredible. The second cohort that we ran through, which was the next 1,000, came back at just north of 800 of those patients, in fact, had an arrhythmia. So our ability to find these arrhythmias through sort of predictive measures of looking at data is becoming very, very good. And I think that's where the paradigm is going to begin to shift, where you're going to empower the patient more so, where we're going to help them understand you likely have an arrhythmia, you ought to be asking for a patch, or you're going directly to the payer and the payer saying, look, I want to look across my entire population, help me identify who has an arrhythmia, we'll go ahead and proactively put a device on and diagnose with an arrhythmia or not. With the whole idea being we're going to improve outcomes downstream. We're going to avoid that patient from ever having a stroke, ever having a syncopal event and falling and breaking a limb and therefore needing to go to the ER, and we can reduce the cost of care tremendously. And I think that's what really sets iRhythm apart and how we're thinking about, you know, being more than just a diagnosis company, but truly predicting and then providing solutions to get cost out of the healthcare system, all while patient, you know, outcomes improve.
Very cool. I want to ask about the patient population demographics in a moment, but define an arrhythmia for me, and what exactly are you picking up that hasn't been detected before?
So if you think about an arrhythmia, really any irregular heartbeat, right? Any irregularity in that heartbeat we want to know about. Now, the most common is atrial fibrillation. And it's probably the most dangerous, and that's what we certainly are keen on trying to identify. But with our device, we actually search for up to 13 different arrhythmias that were approved with the FDA to look for. So there's a whole gamut of different arrhythmias that we're searching for, some more serious than others, but but that's what we're able to put back into the hands of the physician and ultimately the patient.
So you're talking about identifying. What's interesting with Dexcom and with a lot of other companies, you've got a disease, a population of people who identify with the condition that they're managing. The diabetic, the people with diabetes probably have one of the stronger communities out there. The way I'm hearing you, you're getting subsections of diabetes, of sleep apnea, of other areas where people that might be the primary way people see themselves vis-a-vis the disease they have. I have sleep apnea. I have diabetes. I have something else. Do you envision identifying a whole class of people now who are a class of people or a group of people with arrhythmia and that being perhaps another primary identifier of health?
That's a really interesting question, and I'm not sure I know exactly how that's going to sort of play out into our future. What we do know through the data is that the overlap of arrhythmias in these other disease states is much higher when these comorbid chronic conditions are present. Like we know these chronic conditions lead to more arrhythmias. Whether it's more arrhythmias are there as a result of the chronic condition or the chronic condition comes on after an arrhythmia, it's hard to say, right? Uh-huh. But we know they're present in both of those situations, meaning if you had an arrhythmia and you have diabetes, your risk of arrhythmia is much, much higher. Same with CKD and COPD and OSA. So I don't know if it becomes sort of this group of you have an arrhythmia or if an arrhythmia is just part of, these other disease states. I don't know how that plays out. Uh-huh. But I do know that the prevalence is much, much higher. So I think you're naturally going to see us searching for those arrhythmias in those other diseased populations. And I think it's important because a lot of those folks, I don't think they have any idea they have an arrhythmia. They're confusing their symptoms with something completely different, specific to maybe the disease state that they associate with, mm-hmm. when in fact there are arrhythmias there that could be treated and should be treated to prevent the downstream, event from ever happening. So I'm not so hung up on whether we create an arrhythmia community of folks that we need to treat or if we're just finding it in these other, chronic conditions. We just want to find them and help patients. That's really what we're after.
And do you envision the monitoring being similar to today, where it's a limited set of time, 14 days, 21 days, whatever, or you have the watch, you have devices? Is this something that you think people will want to be tracking on a longer term basis?
I do. I think that the more and more folks become aware of the ability to easily understand whether an arrhythmia is present or not is something that's going to appeal to them, and they're going to want to find ways to learn for themselves. Uh-huh. Whether that's through a patch, which obviously we have and is our most meaningful product, or whether that's through a wearable device, which we also have, we can provide it in different ways, right? We do have FDA-approved capabilities to introduce what we're doing off the chest right through a wrist-worn wearable. But one of the things that makes us unique in terms of our own wearable is we are truly medical grade versus sort of just a wellness feature that maybe you get through an Apple Watch, mm-hmm. or a Whoop device or an Aura Ring, right? Like we are truly medical grade capability. And a lot of that's enabled because of the IDTF or Independent Diagnostic Testing Facility that we have built behind our technology that is consistently monitoring that AI and ensuring that we can diagnose what we see there. Whether someday in the future we ultimately go over the counter and make the product available to more and more patients while leveraging the back-end IDTF is something that we talk about and discuss often. I think there's a place for that. It's not our top priority today, but it is something that we're investing into. So I do think the awareness on the patient side is going to lead to a massive increase in the overall market that we serve. I tell our company and our employees, I tell our investors at the same time, we don't see our market as 6.5 million ACM tests every single year. We see our market as the 27 million patients who most likely have arrhythmias that need to be monitored to help them understand whether it's really there or not. And so I think the markets are just, I think they're massive. I think they're much larger than how we think about it today.
Is there more to be said about the overview with the partnership rather with Lucem Health? You talked about it briefly. Lucem's affiliated with the Mayo Clinic, obviously very forward-looking group in terms of predictive diagnostics. What does that arrangement look like, and what is the culmination of that partnership?
Well, we're very excited about it. This is a group of very sharp folks who are very good at taking large data sets and understanding through the underlying trends, in our case, where these arrhythmias are present. And so we made an investment into Lucem. We've got exclusive rights to their algorithmic capabilities to proactively identify populations and patients, you know, within those populations that most likely have arrhythmias. So what we can do is go into large customer sets, large partners of ours, and say, let's look together across your patient populations and let's identify together who likely has an arrhythmia, and then we'll put an iRhythm device on. The financial arrangement, they take a small percentage fee. Think about that as low single digits in terms of when we diagnose arrhythmias. And so that's sort of what the financial arrangement looks like beyond the investment that we've made. But back to the point I made earlier, you know, early pilots are demonstrating we're finding these folks at 80, 90% accuracy when we're able to look through that medical history and identify who we think has an arrhythmia. So when I think about how do you move the market from 6 million tests being performed today, you got to go find the patients to help the payers and the physicians understand who should be wearing a patch. I envision a future where payers are probably sending out notices to their own clients that they're covering saying, look, you've been identified as somebody who needs to wear a Zio patch. The next time you're in to see your physician, we'd like to have you have a Zio patch put on. Uh-huh. Or importantly, we don't need you to see the physician. We can send the device directly to your home. You can apply it yourself and we can monitor and get you a report back. But I think you're going to start to see a much different sort of approach to how the patients ultimately get the device, which is coming through the lens of the payers or these at-risk entities. Because when they identify earlier that the arrhythmia is present, they're going to reduce the downstream cost of caring for that population. So there's a tremendous incentive on their part to learn earlier and then treat sooner and reduce cost of care.
Really fascinating. So let's look forward now. We're kind of wrapping up the interview. What does you mentioned the larger patient population you're targeting in iRhythm. What do the next 5 years look like? I also wanted to ask, I'm a fan of the Acquired podcast, and they're doing they've done an episode recently on Epic, and I know you have to deal with Epic. Anything I should know about the deal with Epic? What does it mean for a company like yours to have a connection with Epic like that? And has that opened any doors, or how does that make your job, your mission easier, accomplishing your mission easier? And then maybe I'll get into my big question at the end.
I'm a big fan of the Acquired podcast as well. Very fascinating episode that they had, you know, just a bit ago on Epic. Epic has been a wonderful, wonderful partner to us, and we really appreciate the teams over there. It is a big difference maker. Workflow is so important to physicians, to patients, and Epic, you know, clearly has figured out how to address that and make it easier. And the reality is, in our customer set, they probably have 60, 65% market share of the systems we're working with. So partnering with them made a tremendous amount of sense. It addressed the workflow challenges, and it makes it very easy for our customers to prescribe a Zio and then to get that report right back in their system already integrated into their EHR system and their workflows. And just it makes it for a seamless transaction. And I will tell you, when we've integrated those accounts through Epic, we ultimately see volumes improve post that just because of the ease of workflow. So incredibly thrilled with what we're seeing there. We expect, you know, that'll continue to be a very big part of our future. And we know when systems integrate with us, we very seldom will lose an account. I don't think we could tell you a single account that once integrated has walked away from iRhythm. So we're grateful to Epic and what they've done there. You know, your question on the 5 years and sort of where does iRhythm go? As I came into the company, I made a very concerted effort to shift our focus a bit further upstream to the primary care physician. I felt like for us to really realize the true potential of our product, we had to get earlier in the care pathway to where more and more patients were being seen. And I felt like the teams had developed a product that was so easy to use that it ought to be able to be prescribed in the primary care office. And that's what we're seeing happen now. We still value our cardiologist and our electrophysiologist tremendously. They are the experts in this field. We want to be seen as best in class through their eyes, and they are very important to us. We'll never take our eye off that ball. But getting to primary care is absolutely critical because that's where more patients are being seen. So if we really think the market is 27 million patients, many of those patients never see a cardiologist or an EP. We need to go to where they're at, which is primary care. And we've had great success. So more than a third of our prescriptions every single year are now coming through primary care offices, oh, wow, which is tremendous. It's growing faster than any other channel within the company. And so we're moving it there. The power of getting to primary care, though, is once you're there and once you're integrated through workflow like Epic or custom integrations that we'll sometimes build with our systems, if you can make searching for other disease states as easy as you have cardiac arrhythmias, I believe you have a right to win in that primary care space. So one of the things that's on our roadmap that's very important to us is getting a multimodal sensing capability off of our patch. So when you put our patch on because you're searching for other arrhythmias, we think we can identify obstructive sleep apnea at the same time. You're wearing the patch at night, we can see the interruptions in your patterns. We can see it in oxygen saturation in your blood. We can identify other things. OSA is a massive, massive market. So when you think about iRhythm in 5 years, I think you're going to be talking about a company that is a multimodal sensing capability off of the chest that's looking for things like obstructive sleep apnea, trying to move care out of the hospital into the home, and just really leveraging sort of virtual monitoring in a much bigger way. And that's what's on our roadmap. That's what excites us.
That's great. And final question. We're an industry podcast, but if you had 30 seconds to talk to patients, what do you want patients to know about iRhythm?
Our goal is to help the patient live a healthier life, to get in front of the challenges that they might be facing. The reality is we can help you identify, in our case today, arrhythmias that might be present. You might not know what's going on, but it's as simple as getting a patch, wearing it, getting a report back into the hands of your physician. Sometimes physicians that are still bought into the old Holter technology aren't willing to go to the patch. We can leverage sort of virtual capabilities to make that available. There are ways to understand what is going on. And so predictive care is the way of the future. We're trying to lead the move into that. And I think iRhythm can be a big part of helping patients improve their healthcare.
That was great. And I'm going to ruin it by just asking a follow-up question to the primary care question. Are the primary care folks prescribing it just as part of a physical, or folks go there with complaining about some sort of symptom that may be arrhythmia?
You're spot on. I'm glad you asked that question because most patients are showing up without any symptoms at all.
Okay.
Right? And so we call it the undiagnosed, unaware, the asymptomatic population. Those are the folks that are showing up with their primary care physician and that we need to get patches onto. And that's where we're beginning to see proactive placement of patches before a symptom is ever showing up. And we're finding with a high degree of accuracy where arrhythmias are actually present without the symptoms. That is so critical because importantly, absent the symptom, the first time they realize they have an arrhythmia is when they show up in the ER because they've had a stroke or they fell and they broke a limb. Unfortunately, again, there was a study recently published, 64% of all folks that get diagnosed with an arrhythmia were asymptomatic, had no idea they had an arrhythmia. We need to go find those folks.
So should this be, you're coming in for your physical, get your blood tested and wear this monitor for...
I think that's absolutely where the future's going.
Yep,
it's no different than sort of Cologuard with Exact Sciences. Like you reach a certain profile, whether it's age or comorbid disease state, you're going to wear a patch every single year and we're going to test and find arrhythmias. I do think that's the future of where iRhythm goes.
All right. Well, exciting stuff. Thank you for sharing the story and for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having us, Tom. We've enjoyed it.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining me on the Device Talks Weekly podcast. This episode is sponsored by Device Talks West. I hope you'll join us at Device Talks West on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Make sure you go to west.devicetalks.com to register. Please do subscribe to this here Device Talks podcast network so you don't miss a future episode of the Device Talks Weekly podcast. And also connect with us on LinkedIn. Connect with me, Tom Salemi. Connect with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. And of course, connect with Chris Newmarker of Mass Device. And make sure you tag Device Talks and Mass Device in your comments. We would love to be part of your future med tech conversations. That's it, folks. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.